Christmas. Thank you to Rabbi Biegun for inviting me. What a treat it is for me to be here together with you, not exactly in person, but virtually, to feel like we're together and to have the opportunity to learn a little bit and just to spend some time together to reflect. And what Rabbi Biegun is doing together with you in Deerfield and the broader community is incredible. And one of the zchuyos, one of the great merits that I have in my role as part of our kolol here in Chicago and different components of our kolol, whether we call it the kolol, whether we call it Neely or MCJL, whichever hat we're wearing at any given time, to be able to partner with Rabbi Biegun, with Ali, in different projects over the years, and please God, continuing to build. And we bless that everybody should be well and you should continue to grow as a community in the new space with good health, being together in close proximity to each other. We can give each other a hug and just spend some time together. So tonight, I wanted to reflect with you on an aspect of Judaism, which is very central, but is also a little bit of a secret. Now, I want to start with an analogy to explain how it is that we're going to discuss this topic tonight, and specifically how it is that I'm going to speak to this topic tonight. Imagine you knew a healthcare worker. And so you can have lots of healthcare workers that you know, and they have different levels of expertise about different areas of medicine, right? So you could have a first responder, you could have someone who's a paramedic, you could have a nurse, you could have, a neurosurgeon, you could have a cardiovascular expert, and then you can have a driver, right? You can have a guy, let's imagine for a moment, a simple guy, heartfelt, devoted, has a high school education, and he drives an ambulance. That's his contribution to the healthcare system. He drives an ambulance. Now, you would not ask this ambulance driver for a heart transplant. I mean, to give his heart, he might. He's very heartfelt. But you wouldn't ask him to perform knee surgery or arthroscopic, ear surgery. I don't know if there is knee. I don't know if there is such a scopic ear surgery. But the driver, you know what happens to somebody who's a driver who spends a lot of time with doctors and with first responders? I could imagine how if somebody spends decades as a driver of an ambulance, he learns a lot about medicine. He might not be an expert in his own right, but you know what? That person may have learned certain terminologies just from talking to the people who are in the back or listening to the radio or listening to the doctors on the intake. And then this person doesn't just drive first responders. Maybe he also drives once in a while. He has the opportunity to drive hospital brass or great experts. So that person who is the driver, who never went to medical school, you could imagine that that person may have learned and picked up over their career a lot of medical information. Some of it might even be inside information that you couldn't learn in a textbook. But because of this process of being immersed in the medical world, you wouldn't ask that person. The person is not licensed. They wouldn't provide medical treatment, obviously. But they could tell you something a little bit about, what happened to that patient last week, or what did the doctor say when they brought the patient in, and what questions did they ask? What was the process that it was like treating that patient? What did they do in this case? What did they do in that case? What did they tell you afterwards? You hear where I'm going with this? Tonight's topic, I don't know anything about this topic. I don't know who just left the Zoom right then and there. But it's okay, because I'm very self-aware and we're sharing this together. I'm not an expert in the topic that we're going to talk about tonight, but I have had the privilege of being around certain people, not for a long time. I'm just a young person, but spending time around the gate of the courtyard of the people who go inside into that secret world. Having had the opportunity even just to keep books on my shelf, some of which you see behind me here, that I've learned. Do I understand everything that's written in these books? Probably not. Guaranteed, Quite not. But at the same time, I'm just here to tell you, you know, I've heard certain things over and over, and they start to give you a little bit of a picture. Now, again, you don't ask people like me for an authoritative view on anything, right? If you want a good schmooze, we could talk like over a cup of hot chocolate. Rabbi Began and I, we can learn together. If you want authoritative, you have to go to the people who are experts. But to talk amongst ourselves and to look into the world, I could say I've seen people who went through those gates. Maybe even I've peeked through on my own. Maybe even I've driven people who sat in the same car with me, who went inside and maybe told me a thing or two of what they saw, what they learned. So tonight we're going to talk about a world, the secret world of Judaism that we don't see, but is very real. Many of us have had experiences, emotional, spiritual experiences that have connected us to this world. Some people you'll talk to even have had near-death experiences or very high spiritual type of experiences that connected us to this world. But what we're going to talk about tonight is the secret world of Judaism, the spiritual world of Judaism. Now, this world has different names, but it's actually a world that we're thinking about more now than maybe we would have in the past, because this past week was the Yahrzeit, was the Hilula of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai was one of the great sages of the Mishnaic period, talking 1800 years ago, and he revealed to the world many of the aspects, many of the secrets of this reality. And so I suspect that a lot of things that in your journey as people who are exploring Judaism and learning are things that relate to this world, that you come across this world of the spiritual side of Judaism, the inner side of Judaism, what we could call in Hebrew the pnimius. Pnim means the inside, right? What we see on the outside is the physical. What we don't see is the inside. And this is true even on a practical level. Many of you have bought a lulav and an esrog. Many of you have lit Shabbat candles. Many of you have, think of any other physical action. You could see that. You could measure it. How tall are the Shabbos candles? Right? How much matzah did I eat a month ago? Too much matzah. Okay, let's leave that aside. But you could tell me how much matzah I ate. But what I don't see is the inner dimension, the spiritual dimension of that world. And that's what we'll talk a little bit about tonight, which is what Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai introduced to us, is that there is an inner dimension. There is a secret world that exists throughout our life. I'm going to pause now for a second, turn it over to Rabbi Began, if he has anything to add, just by way of introduction as to what he's taught or what you guys have talked about in this topic so far in general. Oh, okay. So they should be giving this class. Okay. Great. Good. Okay. Awesome. So one kernel of this truth that we could say that is going to be expressed in a bunch of different ways comes back to the same point, and that is the idea of oneness. If you take away anything from tonight, it's about oneness, about one. And when you understand that everything is one, when we start to think about the idea of everything is one, that has many different implications. Maybe one of the most important implications is that if everything is one, then what I do really matters. Because I'm part of one system. Right? Remember, any of you ever take your children or grandchildren to the science center and they have that Rube Goldberg trap, that contraption, you know what I'm talking about, where you put the ball in one side and then it goes down a chute and then it hits a flap and then the flap knocks. You know what I'm talking about? Yes, we got a couple nods. I think they even have one of these at the Kohl's Children's Museum, which when God will give us a respite from this disaster, anybody of any age is going to be going to the Coles Children's Museum. I'm telling you, we're going to take whatever we can get. So they have these contraptions. What happens? You look at that Rube Goldberg machine. You're looking at it. And you're like, there are chutes and ladders and pings and balls and everything. But you realize when you stand outside the glass contraption, you realize it's all one mechanism, right? What's the whole chop of the thing is that if you just press one button, everything ultimately moves. It's all one. The secret of the secret world of Judaism is everything is all one. God is one. And everything is an emanation of Hashem. And that's going to take, we'll talk about it on three different levels, three different planes, so to speak. The first is that it's not that somehow there's a God in heaven and we're on land. It's not, that's like a strange metaphor that we use for small children, right? That's good from when we're growing up. But what we have to understand is everything is oneness, meaning everything that we are, everything that exists is the emanation, is the light of Hashem, is God's light, God's endless energy, which is somehow being filtered into this world. So the first pattern, you could say, and I'm going to put this in the chat so everybody can see it, follows the following Hebrew pattern. It's a pattern of four. It's called abia, which literally means to express. So what that means is that our world is not separate from Hashem. It's not that Hashem is in the heavens and we're down here. It's that our world is, imagine a series of filters between us and Hashem, that God takes endless light, so to speak, whatever it is, like imagine the sun, and the rays of the sun are filtered through different layers until they ultimately reach us. So the first letter, Aleph, stands for Atzilus, which is the ultimate esoteric, I have no idea what that means. The next word, Beis, stands for the word Bria, which means creation. So it's going from less, more ethereal to less ethereal. And then it goes to something called Yitzira, further creation. Like the words Bria and Yitzira, those are words that you'll find in Bereishis. And then you'll get to our world, which is called the world of Asiya, the world of action. So the first thing, and you see it all in the chat now, is to understand that Hashem is not separate from us. Hashem is filtering to us everything that exists through these four levels. Atzilus, Bria, Yetzira, and Asira. And once it gets down to Asiya, to doing, to action, so the letters, let's say of a table, which is Shulchan, says the Baal HaTanya, the letters Shin, Lamed, Ches, and Nun, Shulchan, if we were to trace it back all the way to the heavens, we would get to something that was much more spiritual. But for us, it looks like a table. It looks like a person. It looks like anything that exists. So that's the first thing that we're thinking about. The first is that everything is one because the existence of the world is just the filtered energy, the spiritual energy that comes down to our world through this mechanism. Usually, when you give a talk like this, you pause and you say, any questions? I'm not going to do that. You know why? Because I don't have any answers. I just told you everything I know. So that's what it is. This is what I've heard from the people who know. That's what they say. So that's step number one. The world that we live in is the expression of Hashem down in the world. Now, what you take from this now is, wait a second. When we light, let's use Shabbos candles as an example. There's a very important sefer on Shabbos from Reb Chaim Chernovitzer, a great Hasidic master called Sidur Shel Shabbos. He says, do you know what it means to light up your life with the light of Shabbos candles? Forget everything else that happened this week. Lighting the Shabbos candles. Because we're living in the world of Asiya, of doing. So when you strike the match and you light that candle, you're bringing physical light into the world. But what you're really doing, says Reb Chaim Chernovitzer, and there's a parallel to this in Reb Chaim of Volozhin, living before him, is you're really bringing the illumination through all these worlds, right? You're really bringing spiritual light into the world because your action of asiya, of doing, is connected through all those worlds. You're reaching much higher. So that's on a general level. Then we could talk about it on a personal level. Each one of us is part of that greater oneness, right? This is on a macro level. Let's talk on a micro level, and that's going to look like this. I'm going to put it in the Hebrew here. One second. Nun, Resh, Shin. One second. Nun, Resh, Nun. What's that? It's not in the Hebrew. Hold on. There we go. Nun, Resh, Nun, Ches, and Yud. The same way that the world generally is a ladder between us and Hashem, each one of us deep inside has a little spiritual ladder. We're one with God. Each one of us has a neshama, has a soul. Every creation is created B'Tselem Elokim. Every human being is created B'Tselem Elokim. Every Jewish person has the special soul of a Jewish person. Each one of us has an inner connection to God, and it works like a ladder. Nun is the lowest part of our soul. That's called the nefesh. That nefesh is just the physical life force that continues when a person is organically living. A little above that, and that we share with animals, a little above that is something called the ruach. The resh is ruach. That's our spirit. That's what we're striving to accomplish in our spiritual lives. Above that, closer to Hashem, is the neshama. Above that is something called chaya. I don't know what that means, a high spiritual being. Above that, way, way up, is the yechidah, the yud. You know that a yud is the tiniest letter in the Hebrew alphabet. You see it on the screen there in the chat. Just a tiny dot. That dot is the tiny, tiny unbroken connection, the tiniest spark that is connected to Hashem. So when we exist in this world, we're not separate from Hashem. We have this channel. We have, imagine like a really thick cord. Anybody ever go, I've never gone here. I went when we lived in on the East Coast. We went to Mystic, Connecticut, where you have a seaport. And I assume you have probably something like that if you can get here to the naval base. I don't know, do they do tours on the naval base? Maybe before coronavirus. So if you go to a shipyard, they have enormous, enormous cords. You know what I'm talking about? Anybody know this? Anybody ever been in the Navy? You ever see a ship that they use for tying up boats to the land? It's like thousands of little fibers together. So a cable. Yaakov, the Jewish people, each of us individually is Hevel Nachalaso. We are the cord, the cable to God. So we're made up of tiny little fibers of that spiritual cord that connects us between us and Hashem. It's like a ladder. It's Nun Resh Nun Ches Yud. That's our personal ladder. So what we do in this world, when we light that Shabbos candle, it's, yes, it's happening on a global level, on the realm of Asiya, Yitzira, Bria, and Atzilus. That's happening on those four levels, but it's also happening on a personal level. When you light your own internal spark, you're climbing that ladder internally. You're drawing yourself deeper within your own personal connection to Hashem. The yud is like a little bit separate because it's way, way up separate, but you'll notice that that first set, the global parallel, is in patterns of four. We find a lot of parallels to the patterns of four. The name of Hashem that is written most often in the Torah, that is the sacred Tetragrammaton, they call it in English. It's Yud, and then another letter, He, and then another letter, Vav, and then another letter, He. It's four letters. It's those four worlds. The Yud is that tiny little spark, and then He, it expands. And then Vav, it comes down to our world, and it expands. So wherever we are, all the people in this conversation, in this Zoom, we are all actually connected to this higher level, to this higher world, on a global level, the first pattern of Atzilus, Bria, Yetzirah, and Asira, and on an internal pattern, this internal cord, this cable that connects us to Hashem within our soul. That's the connection of our soul to Hashem above us. So now realizing, like, wow, what I do really matters. It matters to me and it matters to Hashem because we're in this together. We're connected. All right, I'm going to pause to take any questions, comments, or observations. Rabbi Began, anything to add at this point?
I mean, this is fascinating. I'm really enjoying this. I would just, it's funny because this is very similar to what I was going to talk about at the retreat. So it's perfect.
I'm awesome.
And I also want to make sure you tell them about the retreat, but you can do that.
Yes. Yeah.
People must have questions at this point, so I would definitely...
Yeah, let's open it up. Okay. Feel free to...
Unmute yourself.
Feel free to unmute yourself. If there's any screaming in the background, tell them to stop, then unmute. Just saying. Anybody?
Yes, Rabbi, a simple question.
Sure.
You know, we're talking about spirituality, very clean and very, very, how to say, attractive and neat. And yet there is lots and lots of atrocities. We look around. The world is full of atrocities, full of appalling behaviors, totally Hashem. Since everything is controlled by Hashem. And I mean, you know, we were waiting for our reward upstairs. We're supposed to be rewarded there, not here. Still a lot of atrocities and appalling behavior is allowed here. It's hard to reconcile it. And then you talk about Shabbos and holiness. Here is holiness, and then you look around.
Oh, you're asking a very deep question. I'm not sure I could see who was who asked that question. Thank you for raising it. I'll just reframe it maybe. You know, I want to show you a book I have here on the shelf. This book is called Das Tvunos. Das Tvunos, which literally means the knowledge of the wisdom. And this book is written by one of the greatest, most influential and important Jewish thinkers and Kabbalists in Jewish history. His name was Rav Moshe Chaim Luzzatto, Ramchal. He lived in the 18th century. He started in Italy. He migrated through Germany, ended up in Amsterdam for a period of time. During his lifetime, his Kabbalistic works are somewhat controversial, but ultimately he has joined what you could say, you'll excuse the term, the pantheon of great Jewish thinkers over the last millennium. So Rabbi Began knows that last summer I had the opportunity to take a pause, which was why I had the chance to come and spend Shabbos in the neighborhood, because I needed to take a break and recharge my batteries a little bit. So before I did that, I went to one of my teachers, my Rabbeim, Rav Moshe Weinberger Shlita, who is somebody who I've had the privilege of driving literally in my car. That was part of my ambulance driving analogy before. This is someone who's been inside the gates, who is a neurosurgeon. So the things that he has taught me, I'm not doing any medical procedures on those behalf, but I'm sharing with you things that he taught me. So before I took a break, one of the things that I asked him was, Rebbe, what should I be learning to develop my inner soul? So this was one of the books that he gave me. I didn't quite finish, but I got quite a ways through it. And one of the issues that the Ramchal raises here is exactly the challenge that you're raising. And I'm going to need to do more learning on this to understand, because I'm not sure I totally understand it fully. I could say I certainly don't understand it fully. But what Ramchal says is that there are two modes of how God runs the world. Two layers, two strata. One is he lets people take charge of the world, so to speak. He gives people free choice. And the other is that he guides the world to its ultimate fulfillment. Rav Avram Yitzchak HaKohen Cook, the first chief rabbi of the modern settlement of Israel, also speaks about this a lot, about how there's one way of looking at the world, that we make decisions and we make choices and those have ramifications. But there's also simultaneously another, what's called a hanhag, another way of guiding the world, that God runs the world ultimately to a fulfillment, irrespective of what we choose. And that the Ramchal raises as a conundrum, as a paradox. And that's a paradox. That's part of the mystery of God. And he seems to explain how to resolve that paradox, but I didn't really understand it. But what you're pointing out is that's what we're living with. We're living in a paradox. And maybe if we ask the experts, it's unfortunate that Rabbi Biegun only has a guy like me who's learning with you. If you had somebody who knew more, maybe they would give you this full answer from the Ramchal. But the Ramchal is basically telling us that you're right. There are two parallel, concurrent ways of God running the world that we don't really see how that works. And that's part of the mystery of God in the world. Right? That's just, you know, how could it be that God is leading us to the ultimate destiny and yet allowing certain things to happen? That's part of the mystery. But that mystery, those questions, especially when we deal with painful questions, you know, we have people on this call, I'm not going to specify them by name, like Doris Lazarus, who had people in their family who went through the most difficult questions that could ever be asked in Jewish history. And to those questions, we have no answers. We don't have answers. But at the same time, we believe that God is one and that that same God is operating on both of these planes. I'm going to share with you for a brief moment. I don't want it to get too sad and too focused on this, but the idea of God as one in any circumstance, I want to share with you something. I'm going to share the audio. I don't do this often because it's very powerful, but how often do we have a chance to get together? I want to share with you a song to reflect the same idea that God is one and God is with us and connected to us, irrespective of the questions and the challenges and the difficulties. So I'm going to share my computer sound with you, and I'm going to share this. Let me see if I can. Where is it? Here we go. Okay, I hope you can see this and hear this because that's what I need to do. I need to put this at the bottom, and then this goes on the top. Here we go. You ready? Tell me if you, just give me a thumbs up if you can see it and hear it.
A child was born into this world in 1933. A blessing for a Jewish home in Frankfurt, Germany. And his father taught him Aleph Beis. He learned to read and write. Each night he heard his mother say these words to him. Yosef, my son, the Lord our God is one. God is very near, Yosef, my dear. Yosef, my son, we are the chosen ones. Do not fear, we'll always be together. Yosef was a boy of 9 in 1942. He had a secret hiding place, like all young children do. Horrified, he saw them take his mom and dad away. Alone, he heard his mother's final words to him. Yosef, my son, take some food and run. God is very near, Yosef, my dear. Yosef, my son, we are the chosen ones. Do not fear, we'll always be together. To feel his hand on the western wall was a lifelong dream come true. He made it to Jerusalem, the city of the Jew. And he opened up his siddur, as he had done each day. And he prayed to God for his mother and his father. And an old man stood there praying for a son he thought long dead. That voice, that's my father's voice, was all that Yosef said. and he looked into the old man's eyes. Tears came down his face, and he fell into his father's embrace. Joseph, my son, the Lord our God is one. Come, your mother's here, Joseph, my dear. Joseph, my son, a miracle has been done. From now on, we'll always be together. Joseph, my son, the Lord our God is one. God is very near, Joseph, my dear. Joseph, my son, we are the chosen ones. From now on, we'll always be together.
So that song, which is very powerful, as you could see, that song is from the 70s, from Moshe, yes, and it always makes me very emotional, and there are many, many layers to that. But the idea that God is one, and we are part of that oneness, and even though there are so many questions, but ultimately, if we could peel back those layers, which we can't do because we live in a physical world, we would see those different, masks and ultimately break them down. One more answer to this point, and then we're going to move on to the one other point that I wanted to share with you, is that, says the Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh, the Baal Shem Tov was the founder of Hasidus, and he says that, you know, the story goes that there was a king, and he had a son who he wanted to spend some quality time with, but he wanted to give the son the opportunity to develop a closeness with him. And so what he did was he invited the son to come to visit with him, but he had the son who lived, you know, in the neighborhood, he had the son come visit him in the palace, but the son had to scale seven different barriers, seven different walls to get to his father. It doesn't mean that the father didn't want him to come. Adarabba, the father wanted his son to come and visit him. He's just waiting for him to spend time with him. But he wanted to see that to the son that it was also important for the son to spend time with him. So the Baal Shem HaKadosh says that the world, the challenges that we find in the world, they are not meant to be obstacles to keep us from God. The evil that exists, the whole point of Ra, is just so that we should transcend it to be able to use that as our growth opportunity through that challenge to become the better selves, to get closer to God. You know, the challenge that Hashem has put for us now is enormous. And our heart goes out to all those people who are affected emotionally, physically, psychologically, financially, all the different ways in which coronavirus is hurting people. But at the same time, every challenge is an opportunity. What does it mean to be meaningful to somebody, to bring light to someone's day, to text someone and say, good Shabbos, I love you, I'm thinking of you, how are you? To be able to reach out to people, to learn what's important in life. You know, Baruch Hashem, last night, the Ribono Shel Olam, you know, he gave us a reminder a little further. We used to have in our basement here, in the next room, we used to have our shtiebel, and I was like, oh, what do we need shul? We have our beautiful shtiebel downstairs in the guest room. Yeah, that was until the water came in from the foundation, Mistama. So Gevalt, okay, so that's the next challenge. Mershom wants us to, so how do we get through the next challenge? That's what it is. So these challenges, that Baruch Hashem is a tiny challenge. So what's the big deal? You rip up the carpet, you schwitz a little bit, so you shower, and you figure it out the next day. Ultimately, it's all about getting closer to Hashem, and the Ra, the challenges, the difficulties, the evil that's in the world, it doesn't have any substance to it, only the value that's within it. You know, everything exists on two levels. We started by talking about how there's an inner world and an outer world. Every aspect, like we have a physical body and we have a soul inside. The way, so to speak, for whatever reason Hashem created the world is that he let spiritual sparks, fragments float all over into existence, and they're trapped inside shells. So we have to break through those shells, those challenges, those difficulty, those husks, to find the spirit inside, to find what's beautiful inside. The other pattern that I wanted to talk about tonight, in addition to the big pattern of the four and the little pattern, the personal pattern, is the pattern through which Hashem apparently, according to the people who know, shines his spiritual light into the world. How God lets us in, so to speak, to taste of that spiritual light, which has many different reflections. Because, like we said at the beginning, if it's all one, if it's all the light of Hashem, then that light of Hashem is going to be reflected through all of us. So let's talk about another pattern. You notice this pattern all of a sudden when we open our eyes all the time. Is it accidental that God created the world in 7 days? That there are seven musical notes? That there are seven colors of the rainbow? There are 7 years in the sabbatical, what we call the Shemitah cycle that we learned about in last week's Torah portion? Is that just coincidental? Probably not. That there are seven Canaanite nations, but the truth is that those seven nations are part of a bigger set of 10 nations that were promised to our forefather Abraham. But in this world, we only have seven. There's a base seven, counting the days of the week, but then there's a base 10 before we get to 11. That's interesting. 10 days of the high holidays. That's an interesting pattern. 10, 7, 10, 7. Interesting. Well, that pattern that you find so often in life is just an expression of Hashem's emanation in this world. Now, I'm going to give you a picture here that I'm going to explain to the best of my abilities. For more on this, here's a beautiful volume that I love from a teacher, a friend of mine, a mentor of mine, called Flames of Faith, An Introduction to Hasidic Thought by Rabbi Zev Reichman. He has a lot on this. There's also a nice on this point. There's a little path. There's so much written on this. But just for novices, like regular people like me and you, something like this called The First 10 Days, a little pamphlet from Torah Lab. These are explaining what are called the spheros. Spheros is a fancy word for emanations or energies or qualities. The top three we're going to skip tonight. Those relate to the upper world. That's why there is a total of 10. We count on base 10. But we only operate with seven days of the week. So if you're following, can you see my little mouse on the screen or the mouse? Oh, you see the mouse. This technology is amazing. Amazing. I mean, look at this. The right side, what happened? One day, a couple decided, you know what? We have a crazy idea. We have a crazy idea. We're going to start an outreach center. We're going to start teaching people about how beautiful Judaism is and what it is all about. There's just an initial idea. It's a burst. And it starts expanding. It's like, we're going to rent out a space and we're going to have, who knows, it's going to be massive and amazing and amazing. It's going to be huge. It's going to keep growing. And then someone, you know, depending on which part of the team, what time of day, who it is, someone's going to say, well, wait a second. What's the budget for this? How much space are we going to have? Like, we don't have just like an existing facility. Like, how much space do we possibly have? How many people can we reach? Are we going to find a house? Every project in life starts with an initial spark of energy. It's an expansion. And then it's like, well, wait a second. There's got to be a limit somewhere. The first expansion of life, Olam Chesed Yibane, the Pasuk says in Tehillim, the world was created with expansion. The initial movement to create, to build, to expand, to bring love into the world, to grow, that's Chesed. Who's the pillar of Chesed? Anybody know maybe which of our forefathers? That's right, Avram. Avram is out there. He's the first. He's the initial spark. He's the monotheist saying, this is an amazing idea. I'm going to travel the world and tell everybody, amazing, amazing, amazing. Then comes the pushback. Gvura. Gever, the Gvura, the restraint that says, stop for a second, stop. I know you're all about free love, but honey, we have a son here, and it's got to stop. My name is Sarah, and the Pasuk says, I am the Gevirta in this house. I am the strength, the restraint that says, stop. When God created the world, it was chesed. It was flowing and growing and developing until it was expanding until he said, die, enough, stop. I don't know how many of us have had people in our life who said to us, enough, or who are the people in the life who say, I'm on the receiving end of the stop. But somebody's going to say, stop! It's enough items in the basket. We have enough food for Shabbos. A person of Chesed says we need to cook more food and more food. And the person of Bura says, stop, we got to pay the credit card bill. Says, stop, there aren't that many people who are going to fit at our Shabbos table. Stop, the word Shakai, Shin Dalad Yud, which is one of the names of God, is Sha'amar L'Olamo Dai. God also has an energy that says, stop. At a certain point, we have to stop expanding. Yitzchak came along after Avram and said, we're not going to expand, we're just going to deepen. And then Yaakov, the third of the Avos, of the forefathers, came along and said, I'm going to synthesize the expansion and the restraint. It's something called Tiferes. It's going to be a beautiful balance. It's going to be a proud harmony. According to the tradition, the color that represents Tiferes is the color green. Where do you find green most? That's right. Trees. What color is the color of photosynthesis? Green. Trees require the exact balance of sunlight and water. It's a perfect balance of Tiferes. If you have too much sunlight, the tree will wither. If you have too much water, the tree will be overloaded. Tiferes green means the balance. And then, practically, how does this play out? We take it down. Netzach, which is on the right side, it's the dominant force. It says, be, more, do. It's visionary. It's eternal. The word Netzach means eternal. Moshe Rabbeinu represents eternal. Moshe Rabbeinu was so intense, so overpowering. He had that 40 days of 40 days on the mountain. Nothing could stop him. That also needs to be tempered. You could give charity. You could be a person of chesed and give netzach. You could give $1,000 to someone, but maybe they only need $50 and you're overwhelming them with $1,000. Hod, which is the parallel you see on the left side here, it's right below Gvura. Hod says, not so much. Let's use restraint. Let's be more humble. Whereas for netzach, you're going to blow through a snowstorm by standing up and just powering through it. You know what Hod says? We're going to get through the snowstorm by ducking down, by receiving, by minimizing ourselves. It's in the opposite side of the scale. Yesod says we're going to take all of that and we're going to bring it together into something practical. And then Malchus, which we don't have time for tonight so much, but that represents Shabbos. Malchus, you see, it's separate from the other pattern of six. It's number seven. It just says, I'm just going to be the portal of entry. Malchus says, I don't have any quality of my own, but I'm going to open the gate. I'm going to open the floodgates of all of these previous energies and let them out into the world. You know who speaks a lot about this? Rav Shimshon Pinkus, one of the great thinkers in the Israeli Jewish community before he passed away, unfortunately, in a tragic accident about 25 years ago. He has a beautiful sefer here called Shabbos Malkasa. It's all about Shabbos. Shabbos is what day of the week? Number seven. Because Shabbos is the queen. Shabbos doesn't have any work. You don't do work on Shabbos. Shabbos just opens the gates of blessing to collect all the blessing from the previous week and infuse the coming week with blessing. So when we talk about the patterns and the unity of God, that we are connected to Hashem, different people are drawing upon, at different times in their lives, different aspects of this. One day, we might need to implement a lot of chesed, and another day, we might need to implement a lot of gevura. It's all one. It all comes back to Hashem. Everything that we experience and that we express in our lives, these different emanations are emotions. We have emotions of chesed, and we have emotions of gevura. When we feel that an injustice has been done, we are feeling, we are expressing emotionally gevura. Someone needs to put a stop to that. It's not right. It's not just. Right? When we feel a sense of harmony and balance and oneness with nature and feeling that everything is in its place, we're feeling that pride is Tiferes. Sometimes these can go off in the wrong direction. A person, Rahman al-Islam, God forbid, the Pasuk says, somebody could have chesed, that could go way off the deep end, which is why recently in one of the Torah portions, it describes a person, a man who were to be intimate with his sister. Maybe she's alone. Maybe she's by herself. Maybe she's lonely. So he says, I'm going to do a chesed. I'm going to take her into my home in an intimate way. And the Torah says, no. That sexual relationship is prohibited, and it's a perversion of chesed. It's too much expansion. There's got to be a limit. The same time, without chesed, if a person's only gvur is only restraint, they'll never grow. They'll never give. They'll never love. So each one of these, and we could go on, but the goal is to realize that we have within us these energies, these qualities that are connected to Hashem. We're getting this through our cord, our chevel, our channel that comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, through these different filtered down worlds, through our inner sense of self, our neshama, which is our true essence, our true self. This is the secret world of Judaism. It's the inner world, right? It's the emotional, spiritual world. It exists on the outside through the macro. It exists on the inside in the spiritual neshama level. And it exists as a dimension of us, as a quality of us, as an attribute of us and of the world around us. We'll see in the world trends of chesed and trends of gevura, trends of kindness, of expansion, of love, of doing, of sharing, and then trends of restraint. And each one is appropriate in its own time. You'll see how Hashem is going to express them when we look for it, and we see how people reflect that. And the more we explore this, the more we just ultimately realize the Lord our God is one. We are connected through this great system just to our inner spiritual core, which is Hashem, and that's what we're nurturing. That's what we're coming back to despite the various challenges and the boundaries that we live with by living in a physical world. But ultimately, our goal is to come back to that spiritual core. So I'm happy to take questions, but I hope this at least made us more aware and appreciate, again, from someone who doesn't really know what they're saying, who's not an expert, but just somebody who has heard a little bit of what others have said about that special world and what that means to my understanding. I hope this was somewhat meaningful for everybody. So thanks, everyone, for coming.